are we not starting over? She screwed it up, and they're just, oh, okay, we're going to go. All right.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are discussing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And as we do when we talk about movies, we're going to spoil the shit out of it. So if you haven't seen it, go watch it. Then come and listen.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Nick Glover.
Hey.
And Molly Glover.
Come a little bit closer, you're my kind of man.
I was hoping somebody would sing. I felt like there needed to be some music.
So well, I didn't want to say I am Groot, so.
Too late. Well, it is too late. You didn't say it. So we are here to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Oh, yeah.
So it is literally the Tuesday after Guardians of the Galaxy was released that we're talking about it. It's going to come out a couple of weeks from now. But so it is fresh in our minds.
Yeah.
And we are, as we often do when we talk about movies like this, going to spoil the shit out of it.
Spoilers!
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about so many things that if you haven't seen the movie yet, you'll be sorry that you listen to.
Yeah, turn it off and come back to us and whenever you go see the movie. And go see the movie.
Yeah,
it's worth the big screen.
Go see the movie. So I've given the traditional spoiler warning, which means we can just now talk about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Taser face!
Yeah. Taser face. It's metaphorical!
Oh my God, taser face. I laughed so hard at that part. All the ravagers being, it strikes fear into the hearts of all who hear it. It was so great.
So, okay.
Sorry.
Since we're talking about
Taserface.
Since we're talking about Taserface. No. I think this is great. This is cool. Right into something I want to talk about with this movie. This and the trailer for Thor Ragnarok has me so excited because of what they've done in Guardians of the Galaxy. There is so much goofy fucking Silver Age nonsense in superhero comics. Taserface is a legit Marvel cosmic character in the comics.
He looks
not terribly different.
No, he's got the pink
and
weird
legit,
like
he's,
scars.
Yeah, he's got a burned up face. His name's Taserface. He's a villain, and they incorporated this real thing from the comics, and acknowledged how fucking absurd it was, and just like how Sylvester Stallone and the crew at the end, that's the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right, yeah.
That's so great. Let's
go steal some shit.
Nick,
I don't know.
Even showed me
maybe the best thing in the movie is Sylvester Stallone saying, let's go steal some shit.
It's pretty good.
But it really isn't. There are many better things.
Nick showed me the panel of Taserface, where he's saying, like, my name is ... and then super dramatic with, like, the starburst balloon and, like, the special font lettering.
Yeah.
Taserface. Like, completely, we'll have to put it up.
They will die at the hands of Taserface.
There he is. Oh, man.
Another thing I feel like it's important to note is we went and saw this movie like Friday afternoon, and because I didn't have to work, and my sister, my brother, Riley, and my mom all showed up at the same theater and sat a few rows behind us, which meant I got to hear my brother Riley laugh at stuff, and Riley laughs like me. So every now and then someone would say something and I would just hear from behind me, and it was so great. It made it so much better.
Yeah.
Like, you hear this honking laugh from behind me at stupid inopportune moments that weren't that funny.
Oh, yeah, man. The review I posted after I watched the movie is that I want to hug it.
Yeah.
The thing that I enjoy about Guardians of the Galaxy, the thing I liked about the first movie and the thing I really appreciated about this movie is Guardians of the Galaxy, I mean, some serious shit happens, but for the most part, Guardians of the Galaxy is a lot more tongue-in-cheek and has a lot more fun with what they're doing than the other Marvel titles. And I don't dislike the other Marvel titles. What I like is how different Guardians of the Galaxy is.
For sure. This movie, Guardians of the Galaxy is the heart of the Marvel Cinematic franchise. It is, I feel like there's a lot of serious stuff and there's a lot of high stakes and there's a lot of violence and espionage and all and politics even in the other Marvel movies. And here we have high stakes, but like, I mean, the core theme of the movie is, you know, being a family. And and there are more heartfelt and emotionally touching moments in this movie than maybe all of the other Marvel movies combined.
It's quite possible. And at the same time, there are more laughs.
Yeah.
Which is just about perfect. To me, one of the things that really just struck me about this movie, walking out of the theater, the opening scene, not the first like little teaser in Missouri, but the scene where we first see the Guardians is, I think, about as perfect a Guardians of the Galaxy scene as I have seen, as I've watched. Because, number one, it's about the music.
Yeah.
The whole scene is about Groot responding to the music. There is a fight going on in the background that is nowhere near as important as the relationship.
You don't even get to see half of it.
No, you don't see it until the very end. So the first thing it does, it reminds us that the music is part of what Guardians of the Galaxy is. And then the next thing it does is it gives us a character moment for every single member of the Guardians that we know already.
It shows us that, I think it also illustrates how much time has passed. Mm-hmm. Groot, his aging, right away, it's like, boom, we're a couple years ahead.
He's not in a pot anymore.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I think, like you're saying, it's very... Please continue. I agree.
So it gives us a moment to establish the personalities of all these characters. Mm-hmm. The personalities are 100% consistent with the characters that we met at the end of the last movie. But we see that their relationship is more fully formed. The way that they establish the way how each of them fights differently. It's a masterfully done scene, and it gets you right into it.
Yeah.
But it also tells you this is a superhero action film where the action is not as important.
It's true. It's really strong semiotics in that way. I didn't think about it that way. I like that they always found reasons to have the music. There was always it wasn't just playing. There was a reason. Like in that scene, it's they're listening to music while they're working on something, and then you know, and like there's another one where Yondu and
the pilot guy
are in
Yondu Volume 2.
Yeah, are in the and he's like and he goes, there any did Quinn leave any of that music of his behind? You know, and it's like, yeah, put on some of that. You know, like things like they mention it, like because that's Peter Quinn's thing. He always listens to music, and everyone who loves him gets drawn into that and pulled into that world. And that's something that is, they don't just have it playing and it's cool. You know, it has a reason to the story. I also, just to get straight up into some spoilers. So, we discover that we meet Peter Quinn's father, and
his father in the comics, right?
Yeah. No.
His father in the comics is Jay Son. J-S-O-N, a galactic emperor of sorts. He leads an empire of space, not humans, but I mean, come on.
Is he otherwise kind of boring?
This is more interesting. It's not too much of a departure from the comics, really, in any practical or important way.
Mm-hmm.
It's different, but it doesn't change Star-Lord. Mm-hmm. But that's the whole thing, is he's a Star-Lord because it's a title of nobility. His father he's like a prince. He's legit in the comics. Rebels against his father's empire, all that jazz.
So in the movie, his father is Ego, the living planet.
Yeah.
And more specifically, the avatar of Ego, a way that he has manifested himself. And we are led to believe, up until close to the end of the movie, that this was that he went to Earth and fell in love with Quinn's mom. And it was that love that is why he fathered a child and had one child, and this child came back and has powers, and oh my God, it's so great.
And it gives Peter this connection to a family,
world.
Yeah. And, you know, which of course, you know, is part of the whole story of family in this movie, about who is really your family.
And Also, he has powers, which, you know, is great because I'm sure, you know, it's one of those things when you are a human in a world of other galactic beings who have all, you know, like, you know, been in the case of like Nebula and Gamora, like trained their whole lives to be warriors and things like that.
And have been genetically modified.
And you're just a human. To find out you have powers is pretty great. So
To find out he's half celestial is a big fucking deal. I mean,
that's gonna make a difference. Something tells me when we get to the Infinity Gauntlet storyline,
the lowercase g god, which is great. So Ego's a celestial.
Mm-hmm.
The celestials are the people that we see in the Guardians of the Galaxy 1 flashback to when they're explaining the Infinity Stone they have in that movie. That's the big, huge guys with glowing eyes. They look kind of high-tech Aztec weirdness. They're also nowhere in Guardians of the Galaxy 1, K-N-O-W, nowhere. Yeah. That is the floating head of a dead celestial.
Right.
So we've only seen, discounting the flashback, we've seen two celestials. Kurt Russell and the dead head of nowhere.
Kurt Russell being Ego, Ego Quinn's father.
Who is
the avatar of Ego.
Who is now in the MCU. In the comics, he's not a celestial, but the fact that he is a celestial, it's a big deal. It's, you know.
And Peter is half celestial.
That's what
that is. Yes.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. And so when we eventually find out that Ego has actually fathered all of these children and killed them all, and there's
and
a whole
got
Golgotha
a sociopathic agenda.
Yeah, yeah, and my favorite line, I think honestly, my favorite line in the whole goddamn movie is so he is connecting with Quinn, and Peter Quinn is like, you know. White power. Okay, beams of white power. No, power beams that are the color white, shooting out of his mouth and eyes and hands, and he's sort of like hovering. And Ego is, you know, as all supervillains must do, monologuing, and says, you know, I really loved your mother. It's too bad about I had to put that tumor in her head. You know, she was really, and so because you know the very opening scene of the first Guardians is him watching his mom die, and the powers fades, and Peter Quinn comes back, and he says my favorite line, which is, "You shouldn't have killed my mom and smashed my Walkman."
Yes.
Like, it's such a, like, 9-year-old boy's thing to scream, and, like, that is what focuses is, it's not just his mom, but also, because he does, he crushes his Walkman.
I was in the theater, when he says he puts the tumor in his mom's head, the audience didn't do much. When he smashes his Walkman, oh man, the audience is like, oh.
When he said, I put that tumor in your mom's head, Nick can tell you, I went, and like, hands over my mouth, and I felt so like, I was like, oh, good job, movie. Oh, you got, I had no,
he says,
like,
it so casually.
He says it so casually, and like, knowing that that is the, I mean, really, like, the driving factor behind so much of what happened to Quinn, his whole life. And then the only other thing that was, like, amazing is just all this, as someone who has a stepdad who is my dad.
Yeah.
The Yondu stuff with Peter and how he's like, he was my dad. Like, he took care of me. Because we find out all this time we thought Yondu kidnapped him and held him for ransom and was just all out for greed. But it turns out he found out Ego was killing all of these kids that he'd helped kidnap.
Yeah.
And that this was the one he decided he was going to save. Like, he couldn't do another one. And
yeah, it was just so good. The thing that the MCU does, and that I think Volume 2 does as well or better than any of the other MCU films with this amount of cast, is it gives every member of the cast solid, strong character moments that give us, that teach us more about who they are, that make us care more about them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much universal, whether there's somebody we don't like or whether there's somebody we do. Mm-hmm. What they do with Nebula in this film is amazing. The way and they're doing this dual storyline, which is the Peter and his father, along with Gamora and her sister, and they're playing those two storylines parallel, but they don't pay it off. They don't telegraph what's going to happen. until you finally understand when Nebula finally breaks down and explains.
I just wanted a sister.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then.
And it's like, holy shit, this is not what I expected at all out of this moment. I expected, you know, the standard, it doesn't matter what they're
I'm
past.
A cold emotional killer. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and they gave you something entirely yeah. different.
You wanted to win. I just wanted a sister. It was
And then they don't resolve it. It's not a clean, everything's perfect resolution to that situation, but it does just completely alter the relationship between those two characters and between the audience and that character.
Yeah.
I the more you've been talking about it, the more I've been thinking about every character. I think other than Mantis, every character has something to do with family. As a sideline, it's Drax talks about his wife and daughter again. And how the reason he knew his wife was the one for him was that they were at a party and everyone was dancing except for her. And she wasn't even tapping a toe.
Yeah.
And that's when he was like, that's the woman for me.
Yeah.
Like stoic in the face of music. And then, you know, Rocket talking about how he sees him, you know, Yondu sees himself in Rocket and Rocket's really realizing it's like, and then at the end when he has the Ravager funeral, it's like he pushed them all away, but they came back even though he was mean to him and he yelled at him and he wasn't always nice and he called him names and it was like his family. Yeah. Everyone had something about that. I mean, Mantis talks about being a pet and they're like, oh, so you're a pet. And she's like, I guess. I mean, he's the only family I've ever known, and
then Mantis gets something of a family at the end,
She's so great. She's so awesome.
Yeah, my hope is she's a full member of Guardians and she's going to be back because fucking awesome.
I love her
and Drax was so great.
Oh yeah,
you're hideous.
You're hideous.
you're ugly
because you're beautiful. What? On the inside. You're really disgusting on the outside.
just the thought of making love to you.
And not asking for that. It's just her lack of contractions was such a good way to,
I thought another great, super breakout character, Zardu Hasselfrau.
Zardu
Hasselfrau.
You mean David Hasselhoff?
So the end credits song is David Hasselhoff credited as Zardu Hasselfrau singing the song Guardians Inferno that James Gunn wrote
about
just this cheesy little disco song, but it's David Hasselhoff singing it for sure.
The closing credits are great. And I'm not talking about the credit cookies, which are fun.
Yeah.
But I'm just talking about the credits themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do all sorts of fun things in the credits that you're like, you're always watching the credits to see what's going to happen.
I haven't felt that way, honestly, about a movie since Harry Potter. When they did the Marauders map stuff, that was always so cool.
Nice,
that was one of the first ones I remember seeing and being like, oh shit, they're really doing something with this, you know, and,
I was looking online and looking at the reviews and this film was reviewed slightly worse than Guardians of the Galaxy 1. I don't know. I wonder about it a little bit. It's like trying to pick between the two of them. I really was delighted by both of them. And about the only thing that I think maybe makes one a little better was the novelty of it.
Yeah.
That's why I think I was thinking about this too, because we've had a couple of friends, mutual friends, the three of us, complain about, you know, oh, there was no this and there was no character growth and everything. And I think they're wrong, but I could see how the novelty of it being so strong in the first one that people were going in already primed for that, so it didn't feel as cool. Whereas for me, I loved the novelty of it. It wasn't just because it was novel and new. It was like, I don't know, I love 70s rock. I have a deep affiliation with anyone who likes to sing and dance just for no reason, and sarcasticness. Like, there was a lot of that good, attitude. But at the same time, they are the Guardians of the Galaxy now. it's different. Before they were becoming who they are, mm-hmm. and everything's, it's always a less interesting story when someone is the thing.
Yeah.
There's a reason why
origin stories are so popular.
I was just going to say, yeah. There's a reason that we've seen fucking the Martha's Pearls a thousand times. It's because just Batman isn't as interesting as the kid who became Batman.
Yeah, I feel like, well, also in this movie, I don't want to say that they under-delivered on action scenes that were like a complete scene of action from start mm-hmm. to finish. Like, you go watch Winter Soldier. There's, you know, 20-minute action sequences that are fights with dialogue and car stunts or whatever, all in one mm-hmm. long thing where the action sequence is the narrative.
Yeah.
In this, the action's background to a lot of the other stuff going on.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's just, if you don't shoot for the middle 100%, you're going to get a slightly lower critical rating from people, and that's fine.
And I thought about it, and I thought the movie, a little bit, once they get to Ego, there's a little bit of a drag, but at the same time, I'm like, I don't know what you take out, because so much of that is an establishment for what's going to come next.
Yeah.
That it needs to happen, and the problem is, maybe they needed to figure out,
what did they call Rocket? Well, how are they mispronouncing? Mispronouncing raccoon.
Oh.
I can't remember anymore. But yeah, that was great. Oh, you're right. You're not a raccoon. I meant to say trash panda. Is that worse? It's worse.
Way worse.
But you know, saying there's no character development, it's like Yondu and Nebula alone.
There's enormous
character development.
There's even character development with, like, I mean, for lack of a better term, the Ravager NPCs.
Yes.
Even they realize that, like, their code, maybe there should be exceptions when someone redeems themselves. And so when it's like, we find out, Yondu delivered, hundreds?
Yeah, we don't know.
Under 100, but like enough to make a Golgotha, I don't know how to pronounce
Golgotha.
It, a Golgotha of bones in a cavern of all sorts of beings that Yondu has been delivering. Yeah. I mean, other people probably were too.
Yeah, maybe others as well.
And that's the reason that they say we don't deal in kids. But then when they find out he redeemed himself for the one, they are willing to not only give him his full honors funeral, but like...
They save the galaxy.
That's true that he also redeemed himself in more than one way, but it's, I don't know, I don't think anyone didn't, even Mantis had some character development and that she was willing to trust and open up to other people. Yeah. And she, you know, what she said, she wasn't threatened or intimidated into saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
When Gamora was like, tell us what you know. She didn't say anything. It was later she went to Drax and was like, okay, we're friends. And so I need to tell you this. It was very good. There was no torture or beating something out of somebody or might never made right. It's one of the few Marvel movies where might doesn't make right.
Another thing I thought of is at the end, talking about that opening scene and how they made it about the music and not necessarily about the action and mm-hmm. about the relationships between these characters. And they do it at the end when they're fighting Ego. And for a huge chunk of the fight, all you see is Rocket and Groot and Peter showing up every now and again, but in the background just yelling about trying to find tape.
Yeah. Oh, my God. They're like, hold on, let me ask.
Yeah.
Gamora, do you have any tape? Okay. Drax, do you have any tape? No? Okay. And, like, every single person is like, what did he say? Like,
did you ask Gamora? Well, yeah.
Nebula.
Nebula? Yeah.
She's with Gamora, so I just figured... you didn't ask everyone, though.
Yeah.
Speaking of the end, do you guys know who Adam Warlock is and why, what the Adam deal is at the end?
I read up about it later.
Okay.
I know because I asked
because
you.
Because I didn't know when I watched
it. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Adam Warlock is the star of the Infinity Gauntlet, more or less. Mm. People might disagree with that. Adam Warlock is a perfect being that's been created by science to be a kind of, he's like the Kwisatz Haderach.
Ah.
He's a genetically engineered super being designed to be a kind of a messiah.
Right.
Maybe.
Right. Okay.
In this case, he's designed to take out the Guardians. But
right. But he still has the intent, the perfectness, the created, like he's an orchestrated being. He's very planned and deliberate. He ends up, his existence is tied to the Soul Gem, which is the last Infinity Stone to be revealed, I think.
I think so.
So he, when he eventually gets his hand on the gauntlet, a future version of him that's evil now, there's some time travel shenanigans. We don't need to get into that shit. But he knocks out Thanos a couple times. So, I don't want to get too far into Infinity Gauntlet comic because it's all so different, but they're clearly drawing from that. Mm-hmm. And he will probably be our tie-in or a part. This is going to be an Infinity Wars, like right. No doubt. I think that's where he'll debut as a character.
Yeah.
So get ready to see a blonde space ubermensch. Show up.
Which is interesting because he's different from the Adam that's been in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., who is like the Frankenstein together.
You're thinking of Buffy.
I am thinking of Buffy. Hey now, sorry about that, everybody. I got my fandoms crossed. No, I am totally thinking about Buffy.
There's some Joss Whedon threads there. I get it.
That's embarrassing.
Sign him for what you're shipping.
So I guess my final statement about this film is good, bad, whatever. I've rarely been as delighted by a movie as I was by Guardians of the Galaxy and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I just think that there is this overwhelming sense of fun that goes into these films. And mm-hmm. in spite of the fact that they have these really heartfelt, meaningful character moments that, mm-hmm. that play out really well because they've made you care about these characters as more than just superheroes. They've established relationships between these characters, and the relationships they established in the first movie really pay off in this one.
Absolutely. I think it is I hate to use the word whimsical because whimsical makes me think of like Johnny Depp's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but like it's got this sense of just fun for fun's sake. But at the time, you feel like it's just fun for fun's sake, and then all of a sudden it hits you that it actually had meaning the whole way through. So things that seem goofy and silly end up mattering. And that's a beautiful way to make a movie.
Poignant and beautiful and meaningful.
I want to know what they burn people with that makes them turn into intergalactic space glitter, because I would like to be burned with that, please.
I want to know how they make fireworks work in space. But I'm not... I thought about that for a moment, then I let it go, just like the moment Ego said he wanted to experience what it was like to be human before he'd ever encountered humans. So
she said mortal.
That was one line choice that was like... Okay, let it go.
I don't know how they're doing it in the MCU, but humans aren't exclusive to Earth, but are kind of, but aren't. There's so much shit that looks like us conveniently. It's like Star Trek. It's all bullshit.
Yeah, everyone, all the aliens are basically just humans with one prosthetic applied. Yeah.
Do you guys have a favorite one-liner? A favorite joke? I know mine.
I don't. You go.
Yeah, you go.
I'm Mary Poppins, y'all.
Oh, yeah. You look like Mary Poppins. Is he cool? Yeah, man. He's cool.
I'm Mary Poppins, y'all.
That was great.
I want to see our friend of the show, Wendy Bowlesby, take her Mary Poppins costume
and just shave
down to a red mohawk.
I could see her doing that. That'd be pretty great. I guess probably the trash panda raccoon. And then Mantis later called him, I think she calls him like a, it's like she calls him like a blabloon, or it's some weird, it's some other weird word. They get it slightly wrong, and that's like a running joke throughout. And like she calls him a puppy, and she's like, the crabby puppy is funny. Like,
can I pet your puppy?
You should pet him.
That's a practical joke.
But the trash panda, it's way worse.
Tim?
I think when Rocket is making fun of Taserface, and he's, it's something about, you know, what was your second choice, scrotum head?
Yeah.
Yeah. You wake up every day and look at yourself in the mirror and think, well, I'm Taserface.
Yeah.
His fearlessness in that situation is so great.
And it's so Rocket.
And yeah.
I was just like, fuck you. You're going to kill me anyway. What do I give a shit?
His fight scene.
I was just about to say. That was great.
He was amazing. Because you're like, I in the theater, I said out loud, I went, uh-oh. Like, I was worried because I'm like, oh, man, they're super getting, like, ambushed and they're gonna have no idea what's happening. This is gonna be really brutal. Someone's gonna get taken prisoner, and then it was they just all died.
It was like
it just destroyed them all.
I like there's not a lot of heroes killing people in the MCU, but Rocket unapologetically murders people in the comics. Like I think his catchphrase for a while was "blam murdered," as he would like shoot people in the face. It'd be like 8 people in a row, and he'd be like "blam murdered, 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 murdered," and so like he gets some shit done.
Yeah,
Rocket.
For
sure. He does.
He's
does
really good.
Well, there's a shit. Yondu kills a shit ton of people on the ship. So here's
Oh my god, that was incredible.
Here's the one thing that I feel. One place I feel in when it comes to music in this movie, they failed, and it's the only thing I'm gonna bitch about. Literally the only thing I'm going to complain about. They're walking through the ship. He's killing all those people. And the music that is playing is not It's Raining Men.
No, it is instead a song that I thought only I liked and knew, which is Come a Little Bit Closer.
Oh, I love that song.
Okay, I thought that song was super funny ever since I was a kid. And just the, like, it was a weird choice for, like, thematically, but it was very funny in terms of just it being this, like, cheerful, like, la, 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 la.
No, I like that, but I felt like It's Raining Men was a missed opportunity.
He didn't listen to disco, though. Peter Quinn didn't listen to disco. Yeah, that's the thing. Anyway. It was more of a 60s guy.
But, all right, so we have gushed all over Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. You can feel free to gush all over it, too. If you want to post and say you don't like it, we'll just call you a fucking idiot or something.
Yeah, Ron.
More likely,
we'll just ignore you.
Yeah, we'll ignore it. All right, so it's time for 5 questions. Molly, who has answered our 5 questions?
Well, since Bob Alberti is a Patreon supporter, his answers jump to the top of the queue.
Oh.
And so he has his answers, and he says, here are my way too long 5 question answers for the new questions. I'd introduce myself and tell you a little something about myself, but I'm kind of a boring person, and I don't want to kill your show's vibe. Also, depending on when you use these questions, which is, this is actually works, we can tell them to go see the play that Bob helped write, Anxiety the Musical. It's at Mounds Theater from up through June 3rd at this point.
So June 2nd and 3rd are the other showings that our listeners could see at this point.
And you can go to moundstheater.org for more details.
Or fearlesscomedyproductions.com because it's a Fearless Comedy Show.
Oh,
so you can find out either way. So, hey, Bob, question number one. Which conspiracy theory do you find most interesting or compelling?
Fake answer. My own 9/11 conspiracy theory. I only mention it to make Nick stop listening to me. My 9/11 conspiracy theory is very simple. That the Bush administration were well aware something was going to happen, but had no idea what. So they let it happen because they wanted what the Project for a New American Century called a new Pearl Harbor. They arrogantly assumed there would be a bombing or a shooting upon which they could capitalize, and they were caught flat-footed by the scale and magnitude of what actually happened. This is a fake answer because it's not really a conspiracy theory so much as an accusation of cynical, arrogant ineptitude, and it makes little difference whether or not it's true. My real answer, individual voting fraud. A staple of right-wing paranoia, it serves a dual purpose as a dog whistle for the knee-jerk right and a distraction from actual voting fraud, which is systematic voting disenfranchisement.
Yeah.
All across America, Republican attorneys general underprovision voting facilities in Democratic voting areas, preventing as many as hundreds of inconvenienced voters from exercising their franchise at each location. Meanwhile, not only are there few documented cases of anyone attempting individual voter fraud, and many of those attempts are by Republicans because they believe it actually works, but any consideration of what it would take quickly reveals it's impossible. To work, voting fraud would require knowing in advance how many votes are needed to throw an election. An impossibility to start with. But let's pretend someone has a working fortune teller.
Oh my God.
Now you need enough people willing to commit a federal crime to make a difference in the given election, as well as some way to prevent your opponents from nullifying your efforts with the same effort. And then you need to offer every voter some kind of benefit that would justify the risk. But that's not even what's being asserted by the right. They aren't arguing that George Soros and a fortune teller are organizing Democrats to throw elections. They're arguing that illegal aliens and maybe some Democratic voters are spontaneously and individually deciding to break federal law, possibly repeatedly in a day, in order to hopefully overturn an election with no reason to believe their efforts will work and for no particular individual advantage. It's absurd on its face. And don't even get me started on electronic voting fraud.
Yeah, that's there's a lot to unpack there. We're not going to do that.
I like that. That's legit.
It is fair.
Question two. What's your perfect two-week vacation?
Damn you and your physics caveat. I was going to say going to Mars.
Yeah. Not acceptable.
Suck it.
I'd have to say a sailing vacation in the Seychelles with a teaching skipper. I could learn to sail a boat in the mornings and spend the afternoons and evenings on the beaches. And since money is no object, I get to keep the boat afterward.
That's fair. I mean, it's part of the... I gotta say, one time when Pat and I went on like a Mexican cruise, there was a shore excursion where you could go and crew on America's Cup yacht.
Mm.
And that was fucking fun. I mean, you literally had to run the lines
really?
And everything. And
did you do it?
Raise the sail. Yeah, we did it.
Oh,
cool. It was a ball. It
Wait
was
a minute.
Lot of fun.
If money's no object, then I want to buy Honduras. And I want to spend 2 weeks in vacation owning it. And then I get to keep it afterward.
You want to own Honduras with all of its problems?
I don't know.
I'm assuming.
That's just, fine. Question number three. What's a book or movie that changed your life? Let's get off of Honduras.
I actually had the same answers for the prior five questions. The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. At a very stressful crisis in my life, this movie assured me over and over again that everything would be okay. It told me that the world was a welcoming place and that good things would come from courage and from taking risks. It both helped me make difficult, frightening decisions and also reassured me that the world was waiting to welcome me. It's a very imperfect little romantic comedy with fabulous cinematography and a nice soundtrack, but it told me what I needed at a time when I needed to hear it.
Sweet.
That's a good answer. That's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I would say more, but I've not actually seen that film, so...
I haven't either, but it's based on books, I guess.
It is.
It is based on a book.
Yeah.
Number four, what's the geekiest thing you've ever done?
I created GameBit Multisystems, the world's first company offering a commercial, massively multiplayer online role-playing game, MMORPG. Back in 1983, when MM meant 16 users and O meant dial-up modem. Among our many franchisees who went on to build the contemporary MMORPG industry are Brett Vickers, who helped create Guild Wars, Milwaukee franchisee Scott Hartzman of EverQuest, and Mark Jacobs, past CEO of Mythic Games, who oversaw the creation of Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. So I'd say launching the MMORPG industry is the geekiest thing I have ever done.
Oh, you just want to say inventing the internet by helping write Gopher at the U of N?
Yeah. All right. That's pretty close.
Bob, the most interesting man in the universe. Bob,
on paper.
Number five, what is your favorite hangover cure?
Water. I get really drunk about once every 10 years, and one of my earliest such adventures involved the unwise combination of red wine and the Hog's Breath Inn in Little Canada. Oh my God, Bob, I know that place. Following that nightmare, I researched what caused hangovers and was surprised to learn it's largely dehydration. Ever since then, my deciannual drinking binges end with me drinking as much water as I can each time I get up to micturate, ensuring that I will have to do so again very soon. As a result, I don't get a hangover. I simply remain drunk until managing to flush the alcohol out of my system. Sometimes I'm still dizzy around noon the next day, but no puking or headaches.
Mm-hmm. All right, there you go. So you can make the pleasant part of being drunk last longer by using Bob's hangover cure.
Once upon a time, my metabolism was so slow and I'd keep drinking water up with my alcohol that I would go to bed and wake up drunk.
I remember that.
Mm. Like in my early 20s. Yeah, I would have a night out at the bar, get drunk, come home, go to bed, wake up, and just wake up wasted.
Bob says, there are my answers for the latest five questions. Also, I became a Patreon sponsor just so I'd get priority treatment because I want to be treated like a goddamn boss. And remember, go see Anxiety the Musical at the Mounds Theater through June 3rd, 2017.
There you go.
I wrote the funny parts. Thanks, Bob.
Anything you laugh at, Bob wrote. And if you don't laugh at anything, then I guess Bob didn't write any of it. That's what that apparently says. Thank you, Bob. And you can now end your Patreon support.
Or just casually forget about it and let it go for years.
Please, please. We'll take the second. So, Bob, of course, Patreon supporter. He sent in his answers, and he got bumped to the top of the queue. That is the end of the Patreon supporter queue, which means we'll be moving on to folks who have sent in their answers that are not Patreon supporters.
It's true. Yeah. Unless you're a Patreon supporter
and want to send in your answers first. Or want to support us on Patreon and get bumped to the top of the queue, whatever you want to do. That's great. And if you don't want to do any of that, you could just write us a review on iTunes. It's been a while since we've gotten a new one of those, as we pointed out a few times over the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We have been posting fairly regularly on Facebook. You can get some free comic book codes. That's Nick's true.
Every Friday.
Every Friday. So we do stuff online, yo. Check us out. That's pretty much all we got. Thank you for joining us. If you have not yet seen Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, we strongly give it a big old 3 thumbs up.
Absolutely. All three. Yeah.
All three of my thumbs.
All three big thumbs up.
Yeah.
Go see it.
All three of my thumb bones.
I think you should go see it in the theater. It's big and crazy and fun. And I am definitely going to go see it again before it gets out of the movie theater.
Word.
So thank you for listening. We will see you the next time we do a show, which will probably be on a day next week.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
I am Groot.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
My geek says yes, my faith says no.